Next part or chapter in the UFO contact from ETBRA or the Panzer Cancer Planet mission is chapter 18, Paradise. More than 2 years have passed since I have moved to Central America in order to be near my business in that part of the world. I had first stayed at hotels and an extremely good pension. But soon I was looking for privacy. I wanted to write this book in a place of perfect isolation, looking for a small property near the tropical lakes of Central America. I had contacted a real estate agent. I told the man that I had heard a great deal about their local beauty spot and that if he had any properties on his books on the lake area, then I would be pleased to consider them. He could not have been more helpful. Indeed, he had several properties on the northern shores, a delectable location, and he was sure that I would find one to suit my purpose. With that, he invited me to step into his car and he drove me out to the properties. I've traveled a good part of this world. I suppose I've seen many beauty spots, but to be absolutely honest, there is not one that could match this Central American lake. Its tropical water is a deep yet shimmering blue island are dotted here and there. The ground rises in terraces around the huge lake beyond our waste mountains. It's a picture postcard paradise. The estate agent saw my look of appreciation and must have thought about raising his commission. "You like it?" he inquired. It was so much a question as a statement of fact. It is superb. There is no other word. I can spend the rest of my days here. I took the first property I had seen. It was a fishing and hunting lodge with a series of terraces, its own water system from a motor pump installed inside a deep well. Well-constructed stairways led down the series of terraces. The whole place was like an eagle nest, perched high above the tropical waters. The house itself was on the central terrace. The garage was on the top terrace. Wherever you look, you are met with such breathtaking views that the air is almost surfeited with natural beauty. The formalities were hurried through. Within 48 hours I had the key to the property and had installed myself, my luggage and a housekeeper. I spent the whole of the first day of my tenancy wandering round the house and grounds, climbing the various terraces, feasting my eyes on the stupendous scenes and taking a swim from the little private beach. It was a perfect day, a gem of a day even for Central America, which has one of the most amenable of tropical climates. Again and again I had to admire the magnificent Macalichuat trees growing all the way up to the huge and somber San Vicente Vulcano, lording over the entire landscape. For tonight, I thought San Vicente has been described as a good-natured and well-tempered volcano. But who can really trust a real estate agent in a hurry to make a sale? Once Cog from San Vicente and this paradise and the property could be devastated. On the second day after I had entered into my private paradise, I got out my typewriter and began to write the story of my adventures with the ETB Ryans. From the day that I first met Satura on the Madras Night Express, I had lost some of my diaries, and it wasn't an easy job to find dates and names. Certain places and words I had synchronized by sound, I could not write down in human language at all. I simply had to use similar words and sentences as far as the dialogue with these people is concerned. However, the story was still so vivid in my mind that I practically had a total recollection of the most important events. I forgot all about the real reason for my coming to Central America as I pounded rather inexpertly the keys of the typewriter. My housekeeper fed me at regular intervals. Other than that, I was not disturbed. Although I am not a skilled writer, yet the words flowed. Each night the pile of manuscript grew. Yet, as I read what I had written, I came to the conclusion that all this would be in vain, because now who would want to believe such a story? It's a concatenation of unlikely circumstances for which I can offer very little explanation. With all my limitations, physical and mental, I have only tried to tell what happened, and even if I should be considered a waste, it should be considered a waste of time. I felt necessary to do so because of the religious team involved. It is stupid of me, perhaps, to expect that others should feel about this what I felt. Man will continue to be born into their present day beliefs. Besides, as long as this, our civilization is cursed with the sense of position and contempt. I presume my experience shall only be a reason to find myself very close to ridicule. But I feel that some of what I believe shall be value, especially what the seven cosmic commandments concern, and of what I shall write about as the last chapter. Perhaps they may become little seeds for the future. There are matters of which I have had to maintain my privacy. Even the French philosopher Rousseau, in the course of his Confessions, narrates incidents that have profoundly shocked his contemporary fellow human beings. As far as I am concerned, and especially as far as the sexual habits of the ETB Ryans are concerned, I have tried to reveal exactly nothing and I believe I do not have the right to do this, simply because our own sexual habits are far from free. Telling about the sexual pattern and the erotic behavior of out-of-space people would again come very close to science fiction. In a way, I felt it an obligation to write all this, as I have said, because of my belief in God. I am devoid of personal pride, and it doesn't matter much if people agree with me or not. Besides, I think it extremely silly to achieve immortality by inventions or literary creations. In a few hundred years, even the most important works of art are forgotten, and only very few of them are of schoolroom interest or shown in few dusty museums. Then we have come to chapter 19, The Tragedy of Planet Tagra. About 2 weeks after I had taken over the property on the lake, a curious thing happened. I was working steadily on the lower terrace under the MA tree. All morning typing had not been easy. Also, it was nearing noon and the sun was hot. Suddenly my left hand got numb, and I thought this to be from overworking on the typewriter. But suddenly I felt a burning on my ring finger, and I felt as though a mischievous boy was forcing the sun's rays through an invisible magnifying glass onto the middle joint of my finger. I tried in a hurry to take off the ring and saw the insert flashing and gleaming as though it were a miniature sun itself. I felt my desk underneath the trees. I left the desk underneath the tree and stepped up into the central terrace and the cool of the house, well away from the direct sun rays of the sun. The metal still gleamed and glowed with a fire all of its own, and though I had placed the ring on top of the kitchen table. Then I knew that my friends from Itibira too would soon be getting in touch with me, as in Benares and Lima. I was overjoyed. I went into the bathroom and found some ointment, which I applied to the fiery spot on my finger. Never before had a ring affected my nerves like this. But suddenly, observing the ring, I noticed that the light from the metallic inset had dimmed. I went to my bedroom and lay down in order to think. Besides, my heart was pounding, and I needed to rest. My housekeeper came to ask if anything was wrong. She knew that I usually worked through to 1 o'clock before taking a drink, lunch, and then rest. I assured her that everything was all right and asked her if she could hurry lunch, as I was almost certain that I would be having a vegetarian diet for a long time. However, the more I thought of it, the more I liked the idea. I was convinced that one of the control ships had given me the signal and would visit the lake, perhaps at night. I put on the ring, this time on my right hand, and went outside the house again. All thoughts of continuing with my work had vanished. I climbed the stairs to the topmost terrace and gazed over the lake. The placid waters lapped the shores. The islets, the little fishing boats. Nothing disturbed the calm of this beautiful day of January 15th. Somewhat disappointed, I went back inside the house and started to eat my lunch. But I did not enjoy my steak. Now, nervous as a schoolboy, I got up again and started to have a second drink. This in tropical heat before night was no good. I snapped out of it and went back to the garage on the top terrace and once more carefully scanned the lake. A small sailing boat was lazily tacking up to Los Comados and Los Patos Isles towards the far side of the lake. But there was no sign of any spacecraft, and the sky too was innocent of spacecraft. I sat down under the amate tree and tried to concentrate on the typewriter. But where words had once flowed, now they eluded me. I got up in disgust, wandered back into the house, moved around for all the world like a lost puppy casting for familiar smells. Eventually, I felt so restless that I decided to take the small open motor boat and take a dip in the waters of a sandy beach near the Isla del Altar, or as some native call it, the Isla de los Dioses, the Islands of Gods. So named because past volcanic eruptions have pushed from the very bowels of the lake this giant black pinnacle of a rock that gives the appearance of an immense natural altar. I had been there already the first week of my arrival. From the Isla de los Dioses, one can obtain the most breathtaking view over the central part of the lake. So before taking my dip, I steered to a landing spot from which a path ran to a volcanic terrace that commanded the entire sweep of this aquatic paradise. After I had eased the motorboat inshore, I tied it up to a branch of an overhanging tree and dragged it up the path that led to the highest point of the altar rock. I had almost reached the top of the face when it occurred to me that I had come to take a dip. But this was the wrong time, I thought suddenly, to take a swim. Instead, I scouted around for the most suitable spot where I could stretch out and observe the sky. But unfortunately, the tiny leaves from the escanal trees that grow over the island afforded little protection from the heat of the afternoon sun. So I continued my search for a shady tree. I passed the nests for a few chillos, but the birds were uncommonly silent. The people of Central America love these medium-sized birds that they affectionately call the racket bird. This is because of the row that it kicks up when there is a good news for the hearer. The chillos were strangely silent. I took a short breather because climbing to the topmost point of the north face. From this wrestling place, the lake, the islands, and the mountains are an artist's palette run right. The glorious phenomenon stretches to the haze that is the border of Honduras and Nicaragua. I let the beauty of the view seep into my soul, soothed by the enchantment of nature's beauty. I felt the cloud lift from my mind, the excitement fade from my body. Once more I studied the still waters of the lake. Suddenly I noticed a change in the surface waters. They were ruffled by several huge concentric circles. It was as if some playful giant had thrown an enormous stone right bang in the middle of the lake in order to ripple the placid waters. I looked at my watch. It was coming up to 4. I scanned the lake. There was no large ship that could have accounted for the concentric circles. I turned my cheek to the wind. There was but a gentle breeze, certainly not enough to have disturbed the waters. There could be but one explanation for those circles. Somewhere near at hand, my friend from Itibiratu had effected a landing. I was not worried because I had not seen the spacecraft. Then touched down and take off so quickly that unless one is watching the precise landing spot, it is very difficult to see an actual landing. The concentric rings, however, were good enough evidence for me. In order to obtain a better view of the rings, which could be observed moving out wider and wider over the surface of the lake, I changed my vantage point and strolled round to the southwesterly side of the rock face. I had only just turned the angle of the face when I received the shock of my life. Satura was sitting on a broad ledge. He was so motionless that he seemed to be carved out of the very living rock in itself. I approached my friend. Satura slowly turned and faced me. He was inexpressibly sad. I noticed that his clothing was of a dark green, that he wore a broad instrument belt, of which was a much larger talking device than the one to which I had become accustomed when I had stayed with him at the Miriam flavor station. He motioned to me to come and sit alongside him. This I did, although the black volcanic rock ledge on which he was sitting offered no protection from the sun. As I sat down, I became possessed of a feeling of deep contentment. It was as if he had thrown an aura of peace over me, the peace of mind that was part of the normal emotional makeup of the Itibirayans. I was so relaxed that I smiled at him and asked, "Where is Siti? Is she with you?" Satura smiled back at me. It was a sad shadow of his normal smile, one, dare I say, tingled with fear. Siti, Simsi, Siti, Tsat, he whispered. The translation came to me with startling clarity. Siti is dead. I grabbed hold of that broad instrument belt. The damned communicator had mistranslated. I caught hold of his hands, forgetting the sensitiveness of his fingertips. Ximsi siti zat, zingsi simsi zat, came the remorseless message to be followed by the confirmatory siti is dead, repeated in French and Spanish, the languages which we had used on previous occasions. Abruptly the message ended. Satura eased his back against the rock and looked over his earthly paradise. For the first time I saw him in torment. In spite of my own shocked grief, I felt sorry for my friend. He had known Siti for so many years. He had known her all his life, and his sister, as a little girl, as a teenager, as part of his family, but most of all as a part of his team. Whereas the relationship between Satura and Siti was based on many years, that between Siti and myself was a very short attachment of a few weeks. I looked at the troublesome face of my friend and finally asked him how it happened. He burst out into a torrent of Itibirayan words, speaking so quickly that the translation became affected. Everything he was saying about a planet, Tagra, and an accident was so evocative of Siti that his words were lost in recapturing the image of her beauty. The memory of his sister was lost behind the terrible fate she and seven other astronauts must have experienced on a different world to ours. A tiny little metal sculpture, a cut-off relic in the form of a hand holding the flower of seven commandments, was all my friend had kept as a last reminder of his sister. He gave this to me, and I shall treasure this last delicate memory of a great woman as the most touching present I ever received in my entire life. He mentioned that this many thousand years old relic was of intercosmic origin, and that from his home planet, and not from his home planet. The flower with the six leaves and the round sunflower type center represents the offering of the seven intercosmic commandments God has made to all humanity in the universe. Mostly our women, he sadly smiled, use it as a good luck item, and Siti left it in my communication center before embarking on her own mission. I was sorry to hear that Mr. Hua and several of the men and women I had known at the Miriam River base had also died at the same time as Siti. It must have been more than an hour that we sat on the island talking almost until sunset, which comes early in El Salvador, Central America. I shall never forget his sadness. The mental and physical turmoil caused by his tragedy to all of them must have hurt him terribly. What had really happened to my friends after taking leave of them on that cold morning of February 27, 1967? It would be impossible for me to inform my readers of the correct information I received during the rather short visit. Why he had come to visit me, I cannot explain either. But he came as a friend. Perhaps he wanted to tell me about Siti. Perhaps he wanted to know some additional information about this our world. I really do not know the exact reason for his last visit. Come to think of it, perhaps he only gave me the reliquary of the flower symbol as a last reminder from their world. A last reminder? Perhaps he wanted to tell us in this, his own way, to stop thinking of hell, purgatories and resurrections, of hypocrisy and religious castes, of contempt and playing this international religious roulette more dangerous than the Russian roulette. The odds of hitting the right paradise after death are 1,000 times greater. The death of Siti was the death of an astronaut, the death of a scientist. Her death, recorded together with the death of many heroic human beings, has become part of the great memory of memories, the great intercosmic computer brain which has functioned for many thousands of years on several planets. From what Mr. Satura said on that tropical afternoon, just before sundown on the 15th of January 1969, I believe that our own cosmonauts are heading for a great catastrophe. According to what Mr. Satura told me, I sincerely believe that our present methods of propulsion are absolutely wrong and will end in a great tragedies.